How about we just have Gia sing for the whole time? Some of you might be going, wait, this isn't what I would normally be coming in for. So anybody that's coming in a little late, I'm here today for standing in for Reverend Bonnie. My name is Jennifer Gadbury Hadris, and I am finishing up my second to last quarter at the Holmes Institute, getting my master's in consciousness with a certificate in ministry. Yay! Say that. So, here at Centers for Spiritual Living, our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, up here on the, by Saraswati, founded this philosophy, or the Center for Spiritual Living, by this unquenching need and thirst for knowledge. When he was a kid, he would just read everything. His family wasn't extremely affluent, so he didn't have a formal education, but he would just read anything he could get his hands on, and he assimilated and memorized everything pretty quickly. And in the course of his reading and his life, he was reading all of these different masters and philosophies, and he distilled them down. He found what he called the golden thread throughout all of these different religions and philosophies, and he distilled them down into what we could use as a textbook, living or the textbook Science of Mind. And he did this in the early half of the 1900s. So is it a philosophy or a religion? Is usually the question that comes up a little bit every once in a while. It's a fun debate. I'm not gonna debate it up here because that would get exhausting for you to watch me go from back and forth up here. And I could do it, but I'm not going to, I promise. But I think it would be a great Gourmets for God idea to like hold a debate. Is it a religion or a philosophy? Or maybe that would just be me. maybe everybody else is like, no, I think I like the beer tasting. Okay. I know that when I found Ventura Center for Spiritual Living, because it had been hiding here since the 50s, open doors, people waving at you when you walk by. No, I found it. When I found it, I loved the idea that it was a philosophy. Up until that point, I had lived my life a religious, almost anti-religious, not a Marxist, but almost, but pretty a religious. And so when I came in to this philosophy, I found a way to connect with God that didn't have that, that didn't use the word God and didn't use the word religion. So it works for me, philosophy. So some of you might be like, why is this a religious person standing on the church altar talking about God? Yeah, I'll tell you. So when I was living my a religious life, denying God, Amit Goswami, he's a quantum physicist, he calls it Newtonian or mechanical life. It's when you believe that you only believe in what you can see, what you can feel, what you can, you know, with your senses. That's it. That's all there is. And that's how I was living. And I was doing outwardly appearing very functional. I had and do still have a beautiful husband and a beautiful house and beautiful children and a car that worked and a job and all of these things, all of these trappings of the American life and the American dream. And it was perfect. But I didn't acknowledge the God presence in me. And what happens was then I found myself at dis-ease. It was very uneasy. I was very, I was in a lot of pain and hurting. And I walked through those doors and I sat in the back there and I was like, oh, heard the singer and heard Bonnie. I don't even know what she said. It didn't matter. I felt the ease. I felt that inviting to connect with God that I had denied myself. I didn't think I was going to tear up on that, but I did. And so, yay, right? I came, I found God, I'm a whole person now. Talk over. No. But I've learned all these tools through the center here and through classes and through practitioner training. And I realized at that time, I was doing what Michael Beckwith he calls it that the pain pushes until vision can pull. So the pain was pushing. You know, I was in pain. I'm groping around in the dark because I don't have the light of God. I'm just like, I need something. I don't know what it is. Is it this? You know. And then I find the light, and I come here, and then I have a vision. And the vision is and has been ministerial school. So I go to ministerial school, and I'm going to get to learn from Amit Goswami, who is a quantum physicist. This is amazing. And I get to learn from Dr. Mark Wahlberg. He talks about the brain, you know, and how you can do these scans and where's God in the brain. Awesome. And then this last year, I found myself in religion courses. A bait and switch. What? And I realized as I'm this stuff is coming up, I had thought that I had put away being a religious. I really did. I thought I had put it away. I thought, I'm doing okay. I can say God in a sentence with strangers. I mean, I'm here. And then I start taking these religion courses, and I still have that little a religious. So this quarter, I find myself in the wisdom of Islam. And I was listening to a Audible lecture series by, I'm going to look it up because I can't read my note over there. His name is John Esposito. He has a lecture series on Islam, and he was talking about how Islam got painted, especially 20 years ago, almost exactly 20 years ago, painted with this terrorism brush. You know, Islam is this religion of terrorism. And he was saying how, you know, it was unfairly painted that the Christians, you know, don't get painted with a terrorism brush when Christians do unspeakable things. And he was talking about how that's unfair. And when I heard it, I actually had to stop the recording. It's like, that's not true for me. When I was a kid and I would hear Christians had bombed abortion clinics, I would be like, whew, glad I'm not a Christian. And maybe people shouldn't be. We're bombing abortion clinics. And then in 9/11, we had this horrific incident and death and destruction, terror. And I was like, whew, glad I'm not a Muslim. And then the backlash for that, and you have the Christian ministers on TV saying that, you know, that they're Satan's religion, or saying that the reason that America was, you know, having this horrible thing happen was because we allowed Wiccans to flourish in the United States, or because we allowed women to have the vote, or whatever craziness they were saying. And I'm like, really glad I'm not a Christian now. So, and those things helped support my chosen position. We're back to the debate thing, right? You know, I can be here, I can be here. And I was really entrenched in that religion was not a good thing. So that's where the talk title comes from, Wisdom in Surprising Places. It wouldn't be surprising to most people to find wisdom in Islam, I hope. It won't be surprising to most people to find wisdom in Christian teachings. It isn't surprising to people to hear Jewish teachings, you know, and they're, oh, yeah. But for me, it's been a struggle. I can find God in quantum physics all day, every day. I can find God in the beach all day, every day. And then when someone digs out a book, I'm like, nah. Luckily, with the teachings here and with the teachings of Bonnie and the teachings of Mary Oliver, I have now become open to being astonished. Leaving room for that wonder, leaving room for that astonishment. And it's helped. It's helped break apart a little bit of my entrenchment. So, Islam. Most of you probably know, but I'm going to say it anyway. Islam is an Abrahamic religion. Did not know that. So it's like the little brother of Judaism and Christianity. They through their lineage to Ishmael, who was Abraham's second son, first son, oldest son. I didn't know that. Some of you probably know that Sufism is Muslim. Rumi, right there with the fun hat, the Sufi poet, is the number one selling poet in the United States. Sufi poet, and he's Muslim. Surprise! So, maybe I'm the only one surprised on this, but that's okay. I'm used to being the only one. So, it's like you kind of hear some things, and it's like, oh, did I know that? So I'm in the Islam class, and the first thing you learn in Islam is that they have five pillars. And I love anything that's easy to remember, especially when you're being tested. So five pillars. And the first pillar in the Islamic faith is to say out loud, because they believe in the power of the word, which sounds familiar, no? So you say out loud, there is no God but God, and Muhammad is God's messenger. No God but God. That sounds really familiar to me. I don't know if anybody else hear that. We say it every day here. Linda said it at the beginning of her prayer. There is nothing but God. That is our foundation. It's like, what? No God but God. And so I was like, huh. This is Ernest Holmes' quote here. On, because I was kind of like, did we know that? Did we know that? So Ernest Holmes in Living the Science of Mind says, what's going on in here? I'm going to paraphrase because Ernest Holmes gets a little loquacious and I want room for my talking. So let's see. So he says, Christian, Buddhist, Mohammedan, or any other faith, we take these religious beliefs and we are universalizing the principle by nature is universal. Thus, each religion approaches the same God and must basically believe in the same God. So I love that. Each religion is approaching the same God. And in the United States, in the Western world, you might hear people say, oh, Islam believes there is no God but Allah. And then you find out that in Arabic-speaking countries, Christians worship Allah too, because Allah is just the Arabic word for God. Just, it's God. But it makes it foreign, that they're saying Allah. It's like, I'm sure over there, they're like, they worship something called God. Weirdos. So their religion is just trying to get to God. So how do we do that? And how do we, how do we find that way to God? So in Islam, they have the five pillars. The first one is there is no God but God, and Muhammad is God's messenger. Not his, it's, again, translation, it's God's messenger. The second pillar is to pray five times a day. And that makes for great video footage, to make them seem a little strange, but it's beautiful. For the class, I've tried, I'm not perfect, but tried doing the five times a day prayer. And it's amazing what you can do when you recenter five times a day and remember that there is no God but God. The third pillar is almsgiving, something else that we do here. They give to children and orphans. The fourth thing is Ramadan, the fast of Ramadan, a month of fasting. And we'll get to why that is important. And then the fifth thing is the pilgrimage, if you are able, to Mecca. And it's simple and beautiful and amazing. And it's amazing when you reflect on these traditions that maybe you didn't know about. So, there is no God but God. And I have to go over here and look at my notes because. And how do we do those skills? So in Islam, they have this beautiful symbology that the human form is clay and your soul is light. And then the fire that breathes the light into the human form is called a naph. It is what brings the light into human form, and you know, in firing pottery. I love the image. And so sometimes naphs are called ego. They're confused. Again, it's this translation. But the naph is the self. It's N-A-F, if you're going to look it up later. So sometimes you have a naph, and the naph is a tyrannical brat. We're going to put tyrannical brat over here. Tyrannical brat, naph. I am all there is. It's just me. Feed me now. Give me what I want. Because this is all that's important. I am the only thing important in the entire universe. Me, 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 me. We may know people like that. We may be people like that. Sometimes I am that person. And then there's different gradations of naphs. And then you get down over here. And I'm going to do it over here by the musicians, because we know that they transcend every time they sing. It's beautiful and wonderful, and it's amazing to see. So the saints over here, the saintly and the prophet naph over here. No separation, no ego, only one with God. Beautiful. And I'm looking at that, I was like, oh, that's what, and the Sufis, that's what they teach, that you want to achieve that. Rumi has a poem about it. I'm going to read it. So we have Rumi again with the funny hat. And he says, if you could get rid of yourself just once, the secret of secrets would open to you. The face of the unknown, hidden behind the universe, would appear in the mirror of your perception. It's like, whoa. Okay, I think I've heard this before, right? We have to kill that ego. We got to get rid of the ego. The ego is the source of all suffering. And it says so right here. I just read it, right? The naphs, this one. I want this one. I want to be this one that has no ego, right? Yes and no. What I realize is that to be human, you have to have this naph. You have to have this ego. To be human, you have to have that physical part that helps you function and operate and live and be in this space right now. Your ego drove you to church today. Your divine self kind of along for the ride on that one. Hope so. Hope you didn't leave your divine self home. But these saints over here, they don't have an ego. I want no ego. And here's how I look at it. And now, this is me going off the rails. So, you know, if you ever meet a Muslim scholar and you repeat this, don't give me credit. But how I look at it is that everybody has an ego. And we, you know, we look at this person over here and it looks like they don't have one. And we hear those, I sat out there and heard this parable, the Native American parable about the two wolves, and I had the, oh, moment, right? Like the, oh, yeah. The parable of the two wolves is you have two wolves inside of you. One that is loving and kind and generous and you know, all those fun traits, and then the one that is ego and anger and righteous indignation or judgment, or you have this other wolf. Grandfather's telling his grandson about this, these two wolves inside you. And the grandson asks, which wolf wins? And the grandfather says, the one you feed. And it's like, I mean, yeah, that's an alignment. We, you know, what you pay attention to is what you get. And like so many things, when I take it into meditation, I'm like, so a little insight, I can talk myself into and out of everything. My brain is like, so really is it, do you starve this other wolf? Can you kill it? Can we kill the wolf? No, you can't kill the wolf. It's part of you. It's the ego. It's part of you. You can't kill it. So you starve it. And now what do you have? You have a starving wolf. And what are we going to do? We're going to not pay attention to it. We're not going to pay attention to it. We're going to starve it, and we're going to ignore it. Because if you turn away from it, and I'm only going to live in the light, and I'm only going to be saintly over here. Sorry, guys. we're gonna ignore it. We're going to treat it like Voldemort. Right? Voldemort from Harry Potter. Anybody? All right, so you got Voldemort over here, the evil, we dare not speak its name, right? Oh, he's so evil, we'll just put him over there, the wolf, we're just gonna starve him. We're gonna turn our back on him. What happened with Voldemort? He like festered and grew, built his army, came back, killed half a Gryffindor. What? Like, imagine if they had like paid attention a little bit to Voldemort when they needed to pay attention to him, like, I don't know, 10 years before they were started worrying about him. So, this is what the ego is like, right? We're gonna pretend, we're gonna shove it away. It's bad, we don't want it. Oh no, it's Voldemort. It's that wolf, we're not gonna feed it. I'm not gonna pay attention to it. I'm gonna turn my back to it. Doing that is like cutting off your nose because you don't like the smell in a room. It's not gonna help anybody, and the smell isn't gonna go away. It's still there. Maybe dampen it a little bit for a little while. It's just gonna get worse until you can smell it with your now faulty nose. So, a little Voldemort action. So we have this starving wolf. What are you going to do with it? You're going to turn it back to it. It's going to bite you in the butt. It really is. You're out of luck. So here's what I'm saying in my meditation. The Saint Caesar Milan showed up to me. I don't know if anybody has watched Caesar Milan. He's the dog whisperer. Even if you don't have dogs, he's amazing. I find his teaching's helpful in raising children. No, I'm teasing. Maybe a little bit. Anyway, help me train my husband. No, but with Caesar Milan, you know, he can have a pack of dogs. You can see Caesar Milan, this dog trainer, and he's walking with a pack of dogs, and you would see him, and he would be this saint, right? He has this pack of dogs, and he's walking them. And from the outside, you're looking at him, and you're going, yeah, but he doesn't have my yappy dog. He doesn't have my little narcissist dog. He doesn't have my, like, pain in the butt dog. He doesn't have my dog that bites at the other dogs. He doesn't have that, so he can function this way. And if you watch the show, you realize Caesar Milan has all the dogs. He's got the yappy dog. He's got the saint dog. He's got all of them, and he's got them all going in the right direction because he builds a container for them where they can function and operate the way they want to and the way they're supposed to. So that's what I'm here, and this is what I've learned in Islam, my Islam class. I'm not sure if that's what they taught in the Islam class, but this is what I'm taking away from it, is that you have these elements in your life, and you have to, I have to, give them something to do. If your ego is screaming out in pain, find out why. If your ego is acting up, find out why. Be curious and be astonished with what your ego will say. Have a sit-down meeting with your ego. Have a little one-on-one. Be like, all right, buddy, what's going on? And be open to hearing what it has to say. And you'll be amazed. It'll be like, oh. Half of the problem will go away just in acknowledging that there's a problem. So, what do we got? You gotta watch Caesar Milan. Be astonished. Read some Rumi. He's pretty amazing. And maybe don't paint everybody by the acts of one or 10 or 1,000 people even. You know, be open and astonished to learning the lessons out here in the world. So, and don't get bit in the butt by your starving wolf. Oh, another thing on the wolves that I wanted to say too is don't feed it crap. We don't starve our wolves, but we don't feed it crap. Don't feed it, you know, things that it says it wants. You don't feed it candy or you know, crack or whatever that would make it even worse. Be mindful. To fully integrate and to become a fully self-actualized person, be mindful. Be loving and be mindful. So, on that, I have another Ernest Holmes quote. So you all didn't get a funny story. Here's a funny story. When you do a talk, you're told that you're supposed to have a funny story, an Ernest Holmes quote, and 3 points. I'll let you try to figure out what the 3 points are because I never figured it out. Anyway, so the last Ernest Holmes quote, and I'm going to say the whole one because I think it's pretty amazing. So this is Ernest Holmes from his seminar lectures. I think these are Audible recordings that you can get. The first law of our being is that we are all created to express ourselves, and we need an object of that expression. When we fail to express, we repress, and that's what makes us sick. Life is made to fulfill itself. The next law of our being is that the ego must not be rejected. We must feel wanted, needed, and loved. So I invite everybody here to remember, even the egos, even the parts that maybe are acting a little unskillfully, they just want to be seen and loved and needed. And so it is. And needed. Oh, I didn't give you the... St. Chris is going to play now. And anchoring in that moment, and anchoring in knowing. Mm-hmm.